Looks like we've already got a crowd in the chat room. If you would like to join us there, then please download Pal Talk from the homepage at UFOParanormalRadioNetwork.homestead.com, and you can submit your comments and questions there. All right, tonight my guest is noted Canadian ufologist Grant Cameron. Grant has lectured widely in Canada and the United States, and he became interested in ufology in 1975 after the sighting of an object which became known as Charlie Red Star. And I've talked to Grant quite a bit about this, and it's really a compelling story. He focuses now mostly on researching U.S. presidents, and what they may or may not have known. He's gone to the National Archives upwards of about 20 times, I believe. And I first met Grant last year at the Ozark Conference in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And we stayed in touch the whole time, and I depend on him a lot to guide me through this confusing world of ufology and what may or may not be true. So we've become good friends, and I really appreciate all the help he's given me. Welcome to the show, Grant.
Well, welcome to you, and thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, you've been building this up a little bit, and you've been promising people that we're going to talk about secrets tonight. Is that right?
Secrecy and secrets, yes.
Secrecy and secrets.
It's always been a very important issue to me all the way through my career, which is now going up to 35 years.
That's a long time.
It's a long time. It's something that is actually, when you come down to it, I was just thinking maybe earlier this evening that in terms of secrecy, we call on the government to disclose or to give us an answer or to have a congressional inquiry so we can figure out what's going on. And when you look at the world of ufology, we're actually in some ways worse than the government when it comes to secrecy. And let me give you some examples. During the Clinton administration, Bill Clinton and John Podesta put forward an executive order which talked about the Freedom of Information Act request. And basically, the Freedom of Information Act request has a bunch of exemptions where things that are national security can be withheld, personal material can be withheld. And they filed this executive order, which basically stated, in short, that if a U.S. government document is more than 25 years old, it has to be disclosed unless you've got a damn good reason why you're not going to disclose it. And yet, when you take a look at ufology, we have no such rule. We have basically, we can keep a secret for life. And if you go through and talk to researchers, and this includes you, me, and everybody in ufology has a number of secrets. And
I agree. I even have some. Just like when I wrote about Officer X, you know, I kept his name secret. So it seems to kind of go along with the whole field.
Yeah, and I think ufologists sort of like the secrecy thing. And the sad part is that I know in my research, and I know some of the people that I've talked to, probably the best stuff you have is stuff that's never really been made public. And we can go through some examples tonight. And so what I had done, it's always bothered me, and so what I had done, and I talked to you about this before, is I had basically used this idea of a confessional. So I came to you, and I said, you know, the secrecy thing sort of bothers me, and so I said, you know, bless me, Angela, I have sinned. I've kept my secret. And
I became the high priestess.
Yeah, the high priestess. So I basically told you my secrets, and I gave you a lot of the stories that I'd never released to anybody. And
right.
I basically gave you emails and gave you names, and it sort of helps me in that even though I'm still sworn to secrecy for certain things that I was told, sometimes I accepted it, and sometimes people just send you emails and say this is confidential, keep it to yourself, whatever, and you're sort of stuck having to keep a secret even though you didn't agree to keep the secret.
Right.
So I basically told you the secrets, and now I'm sort of in a better position that if someone comes to me and I tell them a story of whatever it is, and I say, well, I can't really release who it came from, or I go as close as I can but can't release the name, I can always say, well, Angela Joyner knows who it is, and she's seen it, and it sort of gives me a backup that it's not, you know, totally sort of a story that's not going anywhere. Because I know, and I know some of the, I know a number of the guests that you've had on your show up till now, and I know some of the secrets that these people have told, and it always comes down to you, you're talking, and you get something good, and then they say, you know, I can't release the name, and I can give you one example, and it's not, you know, I have my secrets too, but the one Richard Dolan always talks about, the 1991 disclosure, so I'm interested in the president, and he talks about the fact that there was a disclosure effort and that, you know, Cheney blocked it, and that it didn't go to the president, but, you know, it's a very compelling story, and then he says, well, grant you, well, you know who this is, very famous guy that told, you know, and it's, the story just seems to lose it, the same as the stories I tell or anybody tells, that you can tell the story, but you always sort of wonder, well, you know, I really don't know if that's really true. So that's what's basically...
yeah, because if you don't know the source, then you just have to trust the person telling you the story.
Yeah, and even though you may know people, I mean, the majority of the people that you've had on, I know them very well, and I sort of trust them, but I still, in the back of my mind, the minute they say, I can't release the name of this person, then it just sort of, the story just loses its credibility. So
right.
What I basically, that's why I said tonight, I'd like to discuss this sort of idea of secrecy in ufology and some of the secrets that have floated around. Because basically, I always have the reservation, like I told you when you first did your show, that you should try to put on the non-UFO people, as many as you could, and you've got Miles O'Brien, and you've got Billy Cox, and people who really weren't related to the UFO field. And I always told you, well, keep me off the show as long as you can, and because when you get to the UFO people, then it's sort of like, these guys have done the round, everybody's heard their story.
Right.
My idea about talking about secrecy was, you know, I'm always afraid that people are going to figure, well, you know, there's Cameron again. If he tells that story about the president one more time, I'm going to puke. So I wanted to sort of do a show and, you know, so that you have your ratings stay up because, you know, it's always the thing that you've got 70,000, but Joe Montaldo has 400,000 to 500,000 for a show. So it's to sort of give people something new. And the other thing that is sort of just an off thought is that a lot of people are listening on Friday night, and people like Randall, you know, they may want to go to the bar and talk to the Cowboys and stuff. So people are putting out an hour of their precious life to listen to it, and I think we should try to get as close as we can to telling them something that might help them to believe what's going on or that there really is some validity to this whole thing.
Okay, so I agree that, you know, we all keep secrets, and how do you expect the government to disclose their secrets when researchers keep secrets from each other?
Yeah.
So it is sort of confusing.
Because I actually wrote an article, and what I had done, and this was I was asked about it again when I was in Roswell, was people asking, you know, why is the government covering up? And what I had done at one point was I wrote this article, and it started out as the 64 reasons why the government has decided not to tell you what's going on. And they're actually trying to be more than 64. And I've only got a draft, and I'm actually now going to go back and sort of redo the whole thing and sort of elaborate on each of the points. But one of the things was that if we can say, you know, in, for example, you as Officer X or me with some of my story, if we can justify the fact that we're withholding a name, perhaps there's a reason that the government has to withhold what they have. Maybe they've just been sworn to secrecy. And let me give you one example. I wrote a couple of books, and one I wrote was a book that really nobody read. It was the first book published by MUFON. It was called UFOs, MJ-12, and the Government. And that story, we were after Dr. Eric Walker, who was the former president of Penn State University for about 15 years. And I just, the years that we've, it's been 20 years since we wrote the book, and one of the things a number of things that he said, because what he did was he talked in rhymes and riddles. He couldn't get off the phone. He didn't really want to talk about it, but people would be trying to force stuff out of him while they were talking to him. And I remember one of the things he said was the fact that they're asking about whether the government ever had communication with aliens. And he sort of indicated, well, there has been a little bit, but really not that much. And he said, we promised not to tell. And so here it is. I mean, you know, this idea that the government may have promised the aliens that they wouldn't talk about it. So So perhaps there, you know, perhaps the government has a reason, if we can justify not telling part of the story, perhaps there's a reason the government has for not telling the story. And that's where I try to put myself in the shoes of the government. In order to sort of defeat them, you have to understand how they think. So that's what I tried to do. And,
right. And even today, on Google's top news, there's a headline that says, "Lawmaker says CIA director ended secret program." And the very first line says, "CIA director Leon Panetta has terminated a very serious covert program the spy agency kept secret from Congress for 8 years." So when I read this story today, I was like, oh, you know, it really does go on. There is really something to this government, with maybe within a government, or you know, they're saying the CIA has always had contempt for Congress and doesn't always let them in on things. And I noticed, you know, there's more stories coming up now on Google about this program kept secret for 8 years.
Yeah, and where the CIA director is basically cut out of the loop, which was
right, and he didn't find out for 5 months, and the day before he told lawmakers about the program and that he had ended it. So he was shocked. Well, it says he was described as stunned that he had not been informed of the program until nearly 5 months into his tenure as director.
Yeah, and that is a key thing, that you sort of wonder, what are the people who are in control of CIA or the White House or whatever, what control do they really have? And it sort of goes back to, I think Neil Gould is actually listening to the show from Hong Kong tonight. Neil helped me out to get a video, which is still really not public. We've got a copy, but it's not a public video. And this was
Say that again, Grant. Who's listening in Hong Kong?
Neil Gould from Hong Kong. And Neil is ex-politics Hong Kong. And I notified him about a video. Bill Clinton had given I think it was about $150,000 speech to an investment firm there in Hong Kong. And at the end, there was a question and answer period. And one of the questioners, and it sounded like he was one of the guys who was running the show, had basically said, "Well, I'd like to ask you the question, is there a list that's passed from one president to another that only only presidents know about secrets? For example, where's Jimmy Hoffa's body buried, or what really happened at Roswell?" And so Clinton opens up and starts talking about this question, and at one point in the answer to this question, which goes on for about 5 minutes, he talks about this, and he says, "I'm probably not," he said, "I will try to get after Roswell. I tried to get the answer to Roswell, and he didn't succeed." And then he said, "I'm probably not the first president they've lied to, or that bureaucrats have tried to wait out. If there is a secret list, they've evaded me. If there was an answer to Roswell, they've evaded me. And I'm sorry to say, I actually tried to get to the bottom of it." So here you have a president who's actually basically saying that presidents may have been lied to, and sort of, basically admitting it. So
yeah, because he really earnestly tried to find out and didn't really get anything.
Yeah, and yet when you hear his thing, like I know Paul Davis, who was famous for having sent Clinton the first Roswell book by Randall and Schmidt, which when they did the FBI investigation on Monica Lewinsky, looking for the book that Monica Lewinsky sent to him, they actually found this UFO crash at Roswell in Clinton's library. And I was talking to him in Roswell. He was there, and we were talking about this whole issue about what Clinton had said. He was very upset because his father had taught Clinton at Georgetown and had sort of an association with Clinton, and actually had given Clinton two Roswell books. He met him again last year during the campaign when Hillary was campaigning, and he was very upset by what Bill had said, like, how could he say that? And yet, when he listened to Bill talking, there was enough hesitation in there that I still sort of doubt whether he's just giving the answer, because when he talks about, he was talking about Area 51, and he thought about it for a second, he said, "Well, I guess this can be released because it's been, or I can talk about it because it's been released." And he starts talking a little bit about Area 51, but doesn't use the name Area 51. So I still have the doubts. And some of the stories that I've been told actually lead me to believe that the presidents know more than they do know, which is probably the biggest story, secret story that I was sworn to. And I guess we'll start with that one.
That presidents know more than they say they know?
Yeah. And the way this happened was, over the years I've had indirect contacts with the Avery people. And these are the bird-type people who Bill and Jamie Chandray in the early 1980s. They're people who have are in the military or in intelligence and have, at some point in their career have sort of bumped up against the UFO phenomena. And
uh-huh.
They're not inside government people that are, you know, trying to cover it up or whatever. They're just basically from my contacts. And I would, you know, get an odd email from one of them or ask one of them a question. And they would basically be trying to find it out because they, at some point, they found out something about UFOs which interested them. And they're like a bunch of, you know, rich guys trying to get to the bottom of it. And they work among each other. They're not at our level where they're little peons who really don't know. They all have, you know, have had security clearances at some point. And they sort of interact with each other and sort of talk to each other. And the stuff they have is way better than the stuff we have. And the problem with it, as happened after the story broke, I basically sent back the message, well, this is like MJ-12 too. I mean, these guys need to figure it out for themselves, but they're never going to tell anybody. And the way that this key story, and you've seen the emails and this sort of stuff, I sort of got cut off because I sort of leaked the story, and I figured, like, what's the point of hiding this stuff? And what had happened was you and I are both friends with Bob Amenager, and Bob Amenager talks about the Holloman Air Force Base film, which you and I have worked on at great length. And the story was that the film was there, and a number of these Avery-type people were trying to find this film. They were trying to confirm whether this film existed. And one of the people, he wasn't one of the birds, but he was related to the birds, had made some phone calls. He actually phoned me up, and he wanted President Carter's phone number. And I said, well, I don't have President Carter's phone number. And then he said, well, I've talked to Bush, and I've talked to Ford. And so he basically said that he'd talked to them both, and they both confirmed that they'd seen the Holloman Air Force Base film, which is purported to be a film where a UFO comes to Holloman Air Force Base, it lands. This is all being filmed.
Okay, wait, you're saying that President Ford and President Bush confirmed to this person that they both had seen the Holloman Air Force alien craft landing.
Yeah, and Ford had seen it as part of the presidential briefing, and Bush Sr. said he didn't see it in his presidential briefing, but he saw it as AI director. So this basically confirms that there's something to this. And the other thing was, Bush had said it wasn't an 8-10 or 8-12 or whatever. Bill Coleman's making the story that it was this high-secret spy plane that had a flame out and they had to bring it into Holloman, and it landed there and they threw a bunch of tarps over it and all this kind of stuff. And Bush confirmed that that's not what it was. And so the person, and I was good friends until this happened, basically said to me that he had asked Ford about the briefing. When was the briefing? And Ford had said, I'm not going to tell you when the briefing is. Don't even go there. I'm not going to talk about it. Because the whole point, as I would interpret it, is that if he talks about the briefing, if he states when the date is, then you can immediately figure out when the meeting was, because you have the presidential record. You can see who was in the meeting. You can start filing for material. So what basically happened is, I, you know, of course, I'm the guy who doesn't really like the secret, so I started to leak it, and then I got this backlash that basically can't keep your mouth shut, and, you know, this was confidential and stuff. And to me, it's like, what's the point? You know, if this is all confidential, we might as well give up, because the best stuff that people have is secret. And so that's why I proposed to you and to, like, people like Alejandro or Dee or all the people who are on the board there, Karen and Joe, that one of the questions you should ask, especially big researchers, is have you ever come across a story that is extremely dramatic in the UFO thing that would add a lot to the field and even sworn to secrecy? And I can guarantee you, every one of your guests, I can think of the guests you've had already, every one of your guests will have one of those stories. And,
yeah, one of them was Leslie Kane.
Yeah. She had her names of the people that she's talking to now. Now, eventually those will get out, and hopefully eventually all the stuff will get out. But I'd say every researcher has a number of those stories, and I think U.S. researchers would probably have more, because I'm in Canada, and I really don't have that much contact with U.S. military or intelligence people, and I do come up across some weird ones. I'll tell you a story. This just happened a couple days ago, and it tells you how this stuff sort of pops out. When I left Roswell, I went with Paula Harris, and we went to visit somebody, and I won't say who, in Albuquerque, and this person was hosting dinner, and Paula and I went, and so we sat down with the host and his wife, and along comes this other guy, and we didn't expect this other guy to be there. And all we were given is the guy's first name, and so we were chatted, whatever, and I had no idea who this guy was sitting down beside me, a younger guy, and so we chatted for a while, and then we were sitting outside of this restaurant in Albuquerque. So we go into the restaurant, and this guy's with me, and he says, what do you know about Hubble and Clinton? So I said, well, you know, I told him the story that Hubble had been asked to get the UFO information, and that after that, he couldn't get anything, and people like James Fox had talked to him. He said basically talked to Clinton. And so then this guy starts to give me this background, and I'm talking about background here, and he's talking about the underworld in Little Rock, and he names these two guys off. Both of the first names were Larry Case and some other guy. And this underworld about Hillary and Bill and all the girlfriends, and these guys are involved, and also and that these guys, the one guy, he said, had a pass. He talked about the car crash, and he saw the pass, and it was a pass to get into any military institute or installation in the country, and it only is authorized by the president. So anyway, he's telling me all this stuff on background, and I'm listening, and it's like, well, you know, what can you really do with this? Where can you go? So we sit back down, and then we're eating dinner, and then the guy gets up and he goes to the restaurant. Paula says to the host, says, who is that guy? What's his last name? And the host says, he smiles and he says, he doesn't have a last name.
And the host said what now?
What's that?
The host said it's somebody that doesn't have a last name?
Yeah, he just smiled and looked at Paula and he said, the guy doesn't have a last name, which means don't ask. And you could tell this guy had some background and he had some insights the way he was talking. And yet that's the way the stuff sort of passes around. Now, he was talking on background, so, you know, I go out and I see what I can do with it. He gave me some names, but whether you can really do anything with this or not. But a lot of the stuff does pass that way, that you sort of either trust the source, and I think I would trust this guy, even though I really didn't know, who he was. I was just relying on the person who brought him to the meeting, and he wasn't even expected. I didn't even know he was going to show up. But this kind of stuff passes around all the time, and it's very intriguing, and I can see why people in the UFO community get into it and sort of protect it. But you get some stuff like the stuff with the president. I mean, this is, bottom line stuff that it is for real. And so we have these stories, and I think it'd be interesting to sort of share them, but I really don't see very much changing. I think people have their things, and it's very hard to get out of. Even myself, the people I've sort of agreed to people that I won't just sort of tell the story. You sort of get stuck in that thing. Even, and I talked to you about this before the show when I proposed this idea for the show, you even have stuff where people didn't swear you to secrecy and you don't talk about it.
And why do we do that?
I don't know. It's like the story you and I at Ozark, we went out for dinner. You remember the story? We went for dinner downtown, and it was you and I, Linda Howe, Bob Amenegger, and his wife. So we're sitting at the table.
And Robert Powell.
And Robert Powell was there as well. And I don't know if you guys were hearing the story because you were sitting sort of on the other side of the table. And Linda has probably more stories than any. She's had all these sort of contacts. And Linda starts talking about this story about being contacted by Ross Perot. And you remember the story?
I'm wondering if we're supposed to talk about it, though. That's what I'm doing. What's going through my mind right now? Is it okay to say that?
She didn't swear it's a secrecy. She just said this is the first time she's ever told the story. But there was
I guess that's true.
She was telling 6 people at the table. That's what I was saying. Sometimes we actually swear ourselves to secrecy when the person didn't ask for secrecy, and we do it, and we sort of bury this stuff. And as I said, it's some of the best stuff. And, you heard the story. I mean, it was this bizarre thing about the car.
Yeah, it was bizarre about she had to go to a phone booth to accept a call, and she had a certain amount of time to get there.
And then these phone calls go back and forth, and then at the very last minute, they suddenly they call her and say, it's off. There's no briefing. And so when we went to check this, we were talking about it on a chat line one time, and there was a bunch of other people on the chat line, and then I went and checked it, and sure enough, we actually found stories back at that time, rumored stories that Perot was trying to get information on UFOs at exactly the same time. So it fits in with a lot of the material that's there. So a lot of people are sort of walking around with bizarre stories that sort of confirm a lot of what we think is going on.
Right, and some of them, you know, could be really huge pieces to the puzzle.
Exactly.
But it is difficult, and you're right. She didn't swear, Linda did not swear us to secrecy, and there were several people at the table. However, I think she was really talking more to Bob Emanator, and but it was an interesting story that, you know, this presidential candidate wanted a briefing, and then the whole thing fell through for some reason. But
yeah, and she even told me the story. She had the other story, and this was years ago. I don't think this is really that secret. I think she's probably told it, that she had an offer to talk with a guy who had lived with the live alien at Los Alamos. And she talked about this guy was dying, and I think it was Dallas or somewhere in Texas. And there was these arrangement phone calls going back and forth. And she had the plane ticket, and she was going to fly to interview this guy. And almost the same thing happened the day of. They said, we've changed our mind, the interview's off, and that's the end of the story. So she's a fascinating lady, and you meet her every year at Ozark. I meet her, and we go over to the Lone Star, and she'll talk about this, that, and the other, and she just has a very weird sort of connection with different intelligence people that have contacted her, and maybe it's because of her high profile or whatever, whereas I'm in Canada, I don't get as much of that, but she does get a lot of this stuff and has some extremely interesting stories, and so it's too bad that all this stuff is sort of not really talked about, but it is there.
Right, and we all know, you know, a lot of research goes on at the Lone Star Bar at the Ozark.
Yeah, well, you get people start to talk. You know, you get late at night, and people open up, and they start to talk. I mean, and related to that, let's tell the story about you and I working on the film with Bob. And this was something that this wasn't something that Bob really kept secret. It was
just in case people don't know. Robert, or Bob Emanager, is the author of UFOs,
Past,
Present, and Future, and the documentary, he was the producer of the documentary by the same name, and he has a whole list of credit for films on different things, some of them including sci-fi films, and go ahead now tell him about that.
Okay, so this is something, and I've known Bob for a number of years. And I roomed with him. He always calls him his roommate. We roomed at X Conference one year. I asked the X Conference people to bring him in because he has this wild story about doing the documentary during the Nixon administration. He'd worked on the re-election campaign of Richard Nixon, and then suddenly got called in this thing. And he and Alan Sandler had done this whole documentary. So there was various things that he would tell the story, and then I would hear a part of the story I hadn't heard before, and then he would go on radio talk shows, and then I would provide the radio talk show people with questions, and they, to make it more interesting, they would ask him about all this stuff. And one of the things that sort of came up was the fact that he had said that they had given him a bunch of film and a bunch of pictures, and then the Holloman Air Force Base film, which had to be returned, and he told the story about Coleman ordering this film back to the Pentagon, and there was this big, huge guy and his wife, and there was this little tiny desk, and they had to put the Holloman Air Force Base film on the back seat, and they had to drive right across the country from Los Angeles back to Washington to return this film. So he told the story, and then later I sort of thought, I said, well, that's kind of weird. And I said, well, what happened to the other stuff? And he said, what other stuff? And I said, well, he was telling me about this film, and they had a film, and this is not the Big Sur film. The Big Sur is a famous case where Vandenberg, they shoot off this missile, and the UFOs come around it, and they shoot the missile, and it tumbles into the sea, and the CIA was involved and all this kind of stuff. But it's basically the same thing except the shoot down. So Bob's talking, and he's talked about it a couple times to me in various interviews and stuff, and he talked about this film, that they had this film. So then at one point I thought, well, Bob, what happened to the film? And he said, I don't know. I said, did you give it back? He said, no, I don't think so. I said, you didn't give it back? He said, no, and this was, it had Quintanilla's name on it. It had Top Secret on the canister. And I said, well, where is it? And he said, well, I don't know. And he says, maybe Sandler's got it. So then I got you involved, and then we were both chasing this film, and nobody really knew we were chasing it. We were going to try to take it to Roswell this year, to release it in Roswell. And then it got confirmed, after you did the research, that Sandler has it, and it's in a vault. And so the film is confirmed.
And it's been there all these years.
All these years. And Sandler is a film producer, and he had a studio at one time, and he's got a film vault, and this is in the vault. And so the last thing we heard, and this is the fact that Sandler said, we may save it for another project or something like that. You may know the wording better than I. But
well, they said they weren't ready to do anything with the film because they're looking at a project that would include that film. And anyway, and I sort of wanted, can we just fly up there and see it? I mean, we don't have to get a copy or anything. Can we just see it, just watch it? And it must be on like what, 8mm film or something?
It's probably 24mm. It's probably bigger. It was shot
16 or something.
The long range cameras that are used to film the missile launches. And they are working on budgets now together, Bob and Alan. But it's really, from what I was told, I was told too much, but it sounds like it's not directly related to UFOs. But they sort of from time to time over the years have sort of talked about doing other projects and stuff like that.
Well, but the film is related to UFOs, but not the project they're working on.
Yeah. So
but for some reason they don't want to show it to us, and they're not going to let us
come and look at it.
I
guess they got too eager to see it, and they suddenly realized it was valuable. But this is the kind of stuff that people sometimes don't release it or don't talk about it, and nobody ever asks them about it. And the only reason I think I knew it is because I talked to Bob so many times that suddenly it occurred to me that he kept telling me a story about this film. And so I sort of started to question it, and nobody had ever questioned them about the fact that they still had this other stuff. So
but, the Holloman Air Force film did go back to the Pentagon, but we're talking about
the film of the missile launch from Vandenberg, and it's
from Vandenberg, right.
UFOs. And this is all film.
And so just for those listeners that are interested in this Robert Emmenegger story, he will be on this show on July the 24th. So get your questions ready.
Yeah, exactly. So and then there's the one before we run out of time, we should get into. Let me set up your story. And
oh dear!
I don't want you to blow your story. Because I realized this is like a new type book. It was when you did Stephenville, and to tell you a little secret, when I went to Ozark, and I had to replace you because you flew in on some lame excuse about weather or something, and you came in.
That really happened. That was delayed by the weather.
Yeah, and I replaced you, and then.
Then I got your good spot.
I got your good. Yeah, and I didn't really even realize what the Stephenville case was about, because I'd done sightings and I'd written my manuscript and nobody could care less about sightings, and I never really followed sightings. So it wasn't after till you lectured and you got the prime spot Saturday night, and you had the audience on a string, and they were all yelling out questions, and it was a very emotional type thing because everybody felt sorry for you because of what had just happened to you. And so and after that happened, we got to know each other and we corresponded back and forth, and then you came to me and said, an incident that happened someplace in the country. And I won't get into it because it's your story and it's still being investigated, and there's a bunch of people involved, and it sounds like it could be a bigger story than Stephenville. But anyway, I remember going back to Ozark, and you said to me, well, what should I do? And I said, well, I've always had this impression in ufology that if you get to be prominent, if you have a situation where you start to be listened to by the major media, then they will try to set you up, and they'll try to bring you down so that you're just another ufologist where nobody really knows whether to believe you or not. So you contacted me with this story, and you said, well, what should I do? And I said, well, be careful. It sounds like too good to be true. So I gave you advice to talk to a person that I knew would have the contacts and the power to do something, and that you could trust. So that's what you did, and it's spun on from there, and it's sort of been moving on. I won't get into that, but you contacted me, and you said that you had got financing from a private source, and you were going to go and see this thing, and you had asked me to go, and that never happened. But I remember you come back to Ozark, and then you start telling me the story of what you saw,
right.
The object you saw, and then your eyes were big as saucers, and you were talking about this, and you were talking, Randall was there, and you were talking, Randall, wasn't that right? And you were on this logging road. So basically, because a lot of your listeners may not know that you've actually seen something, you were puzzled by what you've seen, but I think you were pretty impressed with what you've seen. So maybe just describe for your listeners, a little secret, what you saw on the logging road.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, actually, it was during the night, and we had been traveling on these logging roads for a couple of hours and not really seeing anything, and this was the third night of being up all night, and all of a sudden, you know, the person that we're with slams on his brakes, and I'm going, what the hell is that? You know, and Randall's, you know, leaning up, trying to get a look, and we all bail out, and I don't know, you know, what I saw, but it was something that seemed quite unnatural in the dark forest setting, and it was probably about 75 yards off, and we didn't, well, actually, I tried to go down to whatever it was. It seemed brightly lit, and anyway... It didn't work out. I still don't know what it was. I had to leave the next day.
But you were pretty impressed, and Randall stopped you from running down the hill towards the thing. You were
right.
Impressed enough that you actually wanted to get closer.
Yeah, he grabbed me by the back of the coat and said,
yeah.
No, you're not going anywhere.
So this is actually still going on, which I guess eventually when it gets all researched, then you can tell the full story, and I think it's as good a story as... Stephenville, and I think you've done well to sort of organize it. You're sort of away from the scene, but I can still remember you telling this story, and I've heard a lot of people tell UFO stories, telling me their stories, and let me tell you, you were impressed. I mean, you were quite wound up when you were telling your story about what you had seen. So,
right, it was not like anything I had seen before, so you know, and could I be hoaxed? Well, sure I could, but to me it just seemed like if that was a hoax, it would have had to have been like someone that had a Steven Spielberg budget or something.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, my biggest regret is I did not stay there and go back during the daytime, and you know, I was unable to do that. So that was critical, and that should have happened, and then I might be more comfortable about really, you know, talking about it, but I haven't told too many people about it, and it's the same thing as other witnesses, I think, face is, you know, that fear of ridicule, or, you know, and I'm a journalist, and I want to have remain to keep my objectivity about this subject, and so it sort of put me in a difficult position, but it was somebody that said they could show me something, and I saw something. I don't know what it could have been.
Yeah, and just to back you up, there are still people that you got contact with, and they're pretty impressed too. So it's not just you. This was something that, you know, the guy was asking for cameras and all this kind of stuff and to document it. So
right.
It's something that does have a lot of backup. People don't know that part of the story, but it's still developing, and you're probably talking whatever 6 months or a year until you really know what's been found out.
Right.
How many minutes we got left? We've got a couple big items to get you.
We're at 9:47 right now, so we got about probably 5 or 6 minutes.
Okay. So let's talk about the book.
Okay, the book. Yeah, this is exciting.
Yeah. Basically, and I saw this, my sister pulled this off the internet. Just for people, a lot of people don't know, there was actually a book on UFOs and the President was going to come out. It was authored by myself and Steve Bassett. And we got near the end of it, and we ran into a problem with the deadline, and he was busy running X conference and doing his disclosure effort. And at that point, Steve decided that it would be better for me to do it on my own, and basically he would promote the book. And Steve has, he was one of the first people when I was putting up my Clinton stuff many years ago who actually promoted me, put my stuff up on his website, and has promoted for me a number of years. We ran into this deadline problem. We ran into a situation where it just couldn't get done, and Steve had other things that he figured were extremely important to do. And so Steve decided he wouldn't be the co-author on the book, which is fine. So what happened was it came up against deadline. We couldn't get it, but it was a New York publisher, and
the name of the book is
UFOs and the U.S. President. And if you go to Amazon.com, you can see it. It's on sale on Amazon.com.
The Secret History.
Pardon me?
Isn't it UFOs and U.S. Presidents, The Secret History?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so they had done major promotion. This is Overlooked, and they did a fantastic job. There was no problem with the publisher, with the agent. And they had actually had pre-orders for 20,000 books. And so it was a major book. I knew that when the President thing came out, because I remember the guy from 60 Minutes that had from Mexico who had interviewed me, and he basically said to me, this book would be a big seller in Mexico. Just send the manuscript, we'll send you the money. And so what happened was I went, and the book is now up in the air. But then I decided I needed a co-author who would be able to do the job, and I wanted it to be sort of like a historic thing, and so I asked you to be the co-author, and you agreed.
So that's right. So we're going to do a book.
That if and when the book does go forward, and it is a pretty popular idea in New York, then you will be doing the basic manuscript done, but we need somebody who has a sort of a journalistic background. And you will be the co-author on the book, and you will produce the way it should be done. Correct?
Yes, and I just want to tell the listeners, I truly appreciate this opportunity that Grant is giving me here to basically, it's all of his presidential research for the last, how many years, Grant? 30 years?
Well, it's about 10 years I've worked on the president.
Okay, about 10 years on the president, and there's just a lot of information that people in the mainstream just don't know about, and it's a great opportunity for me. And you know, we don't know really if Overlook will go ahead with that book, but you know, we certainly hope they will. And if not, then maybe we'll hook up with somebody else.
Okay, and the last thing we should talk about is I promised people that I would talk about what happened in Roswell, the latest material release.
Right.
When I was at Roswell, just to give you a little background, I actually got to be in the parade. I was the canine guy who was in the parade in the MUFON car, and Nick Pope from Britain got to be in the other car with James Carrion, and Alejandro was there. And the parade, it was the biggest parade in Roswell history, bigger than the 50th anniversary. I don't know, was it 100,000 people? It was like 5-6 deep on both sides of the street for miles. It was just unbelievable. And you ever came to the lectures? Pardon me?
4 minutes.
Okay. When it came to the lectures, I had like 20 people in my lecture. So it's the kind of thing where Roswell, they don't really care about UFOs. They just, as the band...
It's more of a festival, isn't it? It's more of a festival than a conference.
Yeah, Jefferson Starship, when they played that night, they called it Halloween in July. So people like to dress up and they do all this kind of stuff. But the idea of UFOs is extremely popular in Roswell. But the key thing that happened when I was there, and I said in 35 years I've heard a lot of lectures, and there's only two times that I've ever sat down at a lecture where I thought this thing might be over. And the one time was in 1978, I heard Len Stringfield talking about the first time anybody ever talked about dead aliens and autopsies and crash sources and stuff. That started in 78, and there was a big lecture given by Len Stringfield. I heard that lecture, and at the end of the lecture, I figured, like, whoa, you know, this could break it. And I heard a lecture by Randall, by Schmidt and Carey, Matt Roswell, and they've got the first book out, Witness to Roswell, then they've got the second book, Witness to Roswell, which was released in May. And I told you, try to get them on the show because they've got so much material. Near the end of the lecture, I thought we could be in the ninth inning. These guys have got incredibly strong evidence, and they actually, as I'll release, they may actually have a piece of the memory metal. They have a situation where they had a researcher from Florida who had contacted them about the Battelle Memorial Institute and the papers that had been done on nitinol, this metal, this memory metal that they'd worked on, and they tracked these papers back. And they heard from a guy, and I think he's from California, right? Don't quote me, but this guy has said, yeah, I worked on the stuff, and he worked for Battelle, and then what they released was not what was in the first book or the second book. They released what had happened since the second book, since May. And one of the stories was a story about the fact that this guy had sent out a photograph to show the photograph of this test tube with this little piece of metal in it. So whether they're going to analyze that metal or not, but this guy claimed that this was connected with the research they'd done on this material that had been thrown down and told them to figure out what it was. That was the one thing. Apparently they found the ambulance driver. The other things that they have is they found, one of the guy files, the main people at Roswell's, they found the files there. And in the files, they found this handwritten note, this Hulk, who was one of the main guys there, and about the little Jewish boy, the little Jew boy who brought the bodies in one of the gates. It was a handwritten note. And this guy had talked about it, but he never talked about the fact about the body. So they had that. They had just incredible amount of new material after the second book. And it's almost like the witnesses are starting to snowball, that they're starting to get incredibly strong witnesses who are coming forward and telling the story now. So I encourage you to get them on the show, and anybody who hears Schmidt or Carrie on a radio show, make sure you listen, because these guys have incredible material. And unfortunately, in their lecture, there was only 20 people as well. So
that's wow. Listen, we're at the end of the time, and I am trying to get Carrie and Schmidt on the show. Hopefully that I'll know something soon. And we're going to have to say goodnight for now, and I appreciate all of the people in the chat room. It's been wonderful. I'm sorry I probably didn't get to everybody's questions. And I want to remind you to stay tuned after my show for Paul Richard Price and the Prophecy Chronicles. It airs tonight, and I'm told it's going to be a really great new show. Grant, thank you so much, and I hope you'll come back soon.
Okay, thanks for having me on.
Thank you, and good night.
Good